D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The college football playoff continues tonight. Notre Dame, Penn State, in the Orange Bowl. You can hear that on this station starting at 6:30. And to discuss the college football playoff, college football editor from The Athletic, Mitch Light, joins us on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mitch, I want to start with Notre Dame because after they lost in week two to Northern Illinois, they were 28.5-point favorites in that game. I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of forgot about Notre Dame for a while. And the way they've been playing since then, and especially in the college football playoff, has been incredibly impressive. How has Notre Dame been able to brush off that horrendous loss early in the season and get to this point in the college football playoff?
Yeah, it's been very impressive. And I credit Marcus Freeman, the staff, Riley Leonard. But even in the weeks after that game, there's still a lot of noise around Notre Dame. You know, Riley Leonard threw two interceptions that game. He really wasn't playing well midseason. There's a lot of rumblings, boosters, in the NIL area. You know, what are we paying this guy for? Mad at the staff for their evaluation, basically 2 years in a row, bringing in a transfer that at this point didn't really pan out. But they just, not to be cliche and all that, they just kind of stayed the course. And they just, their statistics from after that Northern Illinois game through the rest of the regular season, I believe they led the nation in total offense and total defense from that point on. Now, they didn't play the most difficult schedule, but they took care of business. They were just consistently strong, and they just kind of closed all the noise and just took – and, people like us doubted them, said there's no way they can make the playoff with that blemish on their schedule, and they did it, and they've been very good throughout. They've been very opportunistic in the Georgia game, especially. All credit to Marcus Freeman and that staff.
So his counterpart in the Orange Bowl, James Franklin, coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions, I thought I'm just setting it up. I'm just setting it up. Either way, James Franklin had a little bit of a jab at Marcus Freeman talking about Notre Dame's independent status, because Franklin said that he thinks a larger CFP ultimately requires more uniformity around college football. He said, I think everybody should be in a conference. I think everybody should play a conference championship game, or nobody should play a conference championship game. I think everybody should play the same number of conference games. Now, Notre Dame, their independent status is, central to its identity. Sure. What do you make of Franklin's quip there?
I think James Franklin should, coach his own team, worry about his own team, and it's not prevented. When has Notre Dame ever prevented Penn State from accomplishing anything? I can't even think of a scenario where 2 years in a row Penn State didn't get into a 12-team field because Notre Dame, being an independent, didn't play a conference championship game, didn't. I agree it's kind of weird that the way things are structured, but college football has always been weird. It's sort of the charm of it. It's the absurdity of it with the huge conferences and the realignment, but for the most part, you got some leagues have had 12 teams, ACC for a while had 8 teams, then 9 teams. You got some independents. So I think it's part of the charm. I can understand James Franklin's point. It seemed to be weird at this time when his team is finally kind of broken through, is in the spotlight, for him to come off sounding a little bitter about it. Maybe I'm misreading it, but worry about your own team.
Mitch, I think what he was trying, I think part of his thing was, at least how I understood people explaining it afterwards, he's talking about the split that has to be done with conferences in regards to the monies. Notre Dame doesn't have to split with anybody because they're not in a conference. And what Franklin is saying is, okay, we got to split the money with the Big Ten. Texas got to split the money with the SEC, but the $14 million that Notre Dame gets, they don't get to split it with anyone. They get to take that money and then use it on their NIL. And I get it, and I understand that part, but I think that's what he was more so a part of what he was alluding to, that people do agree. That's why, other coaches, maybe not now, But this has been a talk with Notre Dame since I was in college about them joining a conference.
Yeah, I get that. That's fair. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But again, it just if it was more prevalent, and I'm not saying mm-hmm. Notre Dame deserves special treatment, but if there were three Notre Dames out there and more independents getting more percentage of the money, like I just think it's just the timing again is
exactly.
weird because he's finally broken through and should be celebrating his team's achievements. And I like James Franklin. Obviously, he's a very good coach. He's done very well at both stops. To me, and now from the outside looking in, he just always seems to be so concerned what his program doesn't have rather than what it does have. Like, Penn State is one of the great programs in college football. Unbelievable fan base. But it's just always our NIL this, mm-hmm. just always seems to be so concerned, again, what his program doesn't have, and rather than appreciating what they do have.
It is part of what makes him unique and successful, because I can remember, and Mitch, you can yeah. as well, his drive. Like, I think David Williams, granted him the indoor mm-hmm. practice facility that had been lacking for years and years
right.
that he wanted. And I thought it was amusing, and I think David Williams did too, was they had barely, said, Coach Franklin, mm-hmm. we're going to give you the indoor practice. Okay, but what's next? He was like, don't you know we're still so far behind everybody else? That's what drives him, though, that it's never – I agree 100% with what you're saying there, Mitch. And I also think it's funny. He thinks everybody should play the same amount of conference mm-hmm. games. He was fighting to keep 8 conference games when he was with Vanderbilt because he knew that gave them a better pathway to scheduling the way he wanted to make sure that they got wins and could build the program. And I bought the argument a lot, but I think it's interesting that he's different places, different times. You can change your views.
No doubt. And, coaches should always be looking out for themselves and their program. You can go back and find a college basketball coach who's in the ACC. The ACC is the best league. It's the best league, hardest venues, and it goes to the SEC or the Big 12. It's by far the best league and all that stuff. Like, I'm not picking on Buzz Williams. I have no idea, but I was just thinking about him earlier because I watched Texas A&M last night. I bet when he was at Marquette, Big East, best league in the country. ACC, best league in the country. SEC, best league in the country. So you're going to promote your own league, your own team, and I don't blame them for that type of stuff.
Now, of the 4 remaining head coaches, who do you think – and this is not about – firing. It just has nothing to yeah. do with if they don't win, they will be on a hot seat. I don't think if any one of these guys lose, I don't think then they're on a hot seat. I think all of them got their program in a place where they're going to continue to win for years to come. But in saying that, which coach do you believe is sort of, it's one of those deals where you're going to have to win moving forward or else – the fan base may be on you just a tad bit. So who has more to lose, in a sense, between these 4 coaches?
I'm going to turn it around a little bit. I think Ryan Day has the most to gain.
Okay.
Like, basically the same point. It's like, I think because of losing to Michigan all those years in a row and how bad that was this year, sure, they love these last 2 games. They've been great against Tennessee and Oregon. But if they lose in this game, there's going to be a portion of that fan base, that won't forget what happened against Michigan, won't forget the failures to win a national championship. So I think Ryan Day still has the most pressure on him to win. I think every coach we're at the top of the sport here. All these guys have a ton of pressure. I would put Sark on the bottom end of that I just think he's done such a great job shedding so much baggage with that program at Texas that we saw in the last 10, 15 years, how they couldn't break through to go to the playoff 2 years in a row. So obviously it'd be great for all these coaches' careers, job security, all that to win. But I put Ryan Day as the most to gain, and then I put Sark on the other end of that spectrum.
Not to mention Ohio State and Day, they do have the highest payroll now that Oregon is out. They do have the highest payroll in college football.
They're also a victim of this recent success too.
Yeah.
It's like I think as fans of any sport, whatever sport our team, we want to see our team play to its best potential. And you understand if you're, whatever your situation is, that's the frustration of Ohio State fans. They knew how good this roster was, and then you see how good they played, how well they played the last 2 weeks, and you're like, why are we not playing that well every week? Why can we not do that against Michigan? So I think it's also like he has to win now even more because they showed how good they can be at their best.
Mitch Light, college football editor for The Athletic. Mitch, speaking of Texas, interesting storyline, and this is just a natural progression of all of the NIL stuff, but you had a lot of these whispers of the minute Texas loses, there's going to be a huge push. Hey, do you want to go into the portal? We'll pay you huge money. We know Arch Manning is on the rise for Texas. And I thought he handled himself pretty well in the game against Arizona State, but I just wonder how that affects a kid with, you know, trying to win a championship when you kind of know this is out there. And this is, we're talking about, I think you guys reported or other people, $6 million or something like that has been floating out there.
Yeah, we didn't report that. We were just a little more, I guess, conservative with throwing out NIL dollars because it's so hard to confirm and verify. Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, that he Quinn Ewers has a great head on his shoulders. He's a mature kid. When you are the number one recruit in the country in your class, and for a while he had a perfect score in the composite rankings of like 1.00. Like there's only been like four of those all time. Like I don't think he ended up there, but point being, he has been a big name in recruiting circles and college football circles since his freshman, sophomore year in high school. Goes to Ohio State, goes to Texas. So he is used to the spotlight. That being said, I don't know how it doesn't affect you when you're deciding, you know, he's thinking about his future and he needs to decide quickly after this game. Is he going to come back to Texas? Is he going to go to the NFL draft? Or is he going to go in the portal? And there have been conversations. I know that with other, not think he has, but with other schools. It's not, these aren't just rumors. Again, like you said, he played well against Arizona State. I thought he played very, very well. He's, you know, he's doing it with the most famous backup quarterback, looking over his shoulder there. So I would expect him to play well. I don't think it'll really affect, but if he doesn't play well, will people throw this out there? I don't know. But it's as you mentioned, it's kind of a sign of the times.
Ohio State, they've played at such a high level in these two games. I always wonder how that's going to affect the next game because when I watched Ohio State a few times during the season, they didn't look anywhere near that loose and that sharp. But, wow, is it fair to say that Ohio State can hit a level that these other three teams may not be able to?
That's very fair. It's accurate. And I think you made a good point there, Willie, about being loose. Like, Ohio State's almost like a professional team. Like, you just – there's business – just – not saying they don't have fun playing football. I've made this case about Ohio State a lot of times. It's like the expectations are so high at Ohio State. Like no one's happy unless they win 50-10 every week. And I know there's some SEC schools like that too, but it's just Ohio State, which has been the top dog in the Big Ten. It just seems a little bit different. It's like they don't always look like they're having fun. So credit to Ryan Day, who was facing so much pressure after the Michigan game for getting his team to play loose. And Will Howard had an up-and-down season. He's having fun playing really well. So I think that's probably a key to it. They are playing, you know, I'm not saying by no stretch does Ohio State have house money because their expectations are so high, but they're just playing with a different looseness, whatever, like the term you use. So, yeah, when they're at their best, they're a team without a weakness. You could say the offensive line because of the injuries they've had, but they seem to have sorted that out. So, you know, they have the highest ceiling of the four teams, no doubt about it.
I want to ask you your perspective on the Vanderbilt season. I can remember Adam asking you the question before the Virginia Tech game, the week of the Virginia Tech game. And we were all
7-6, right, with a bowl win, I think.
Yes, that is correct.
We're going to go back and look at the tape. I think I said that.
I'm not sure that that's the case, but you have asked it. You have asked to check the tape before, so we can probably accommodate you there. But I remember Adam asking, and it was purely – an unknown, and I think your answer was reflected that as well. I would be the first to tell you, after what happened last season, I had zero expectations. I didn't know what to think, but to think that they were going to have the season they did, I could not have dreamed, honestly. I hoped for it, but I can't. I don't think you can say enough about how they turned that around. I realize that in today's athletic world, if you change your team over, you can make a pretty radical change, as we're learning. But at the same time, at Vanderbilt, in this league where there were so many comments being made of, does Vanderbilt even want to be in this league anymore? Do they even want to do this? to have that year was really, really special. But maybe if you could put sort of a summary on it.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I mean, the only thing I would say is in sports, you just never know, obviously. I mean, there's just turnarounds all the time that are unexpected. But the way last season ended, not just, we've seen some poor Vanderbilt teams, but if you look at the margins of defeat last year and just the body language, and Clark Lee has talked a lot about this year, the body language last year, specifically the Kentucky game, and how the program and that staff, how they just sort of reinvented the way they go about it from a developmental program to, you know, recruiting and develop to hitting the portal hard. And they obviously struck gold at the quarterback position and with the coaching staff changes they made. So, very, very surprised. And it's just like you throw out this word culture all the time. It's overused, but it's important. That's my concern with every team that is very portal heavy is the culture, because you can bring in 20 guys. Let's say you bring in 20 guys, 18, 19 can be great, fit your program, fit your identity, but you bring one guy in who doesn't, can disrupt the locker room. And we've seen that. I think that happened at Florida State to some degree. So yeah, tons of credit for Vanderbilt. I think they've done a really good job this offseason. I think Gunnar Hansen, the left tackle, is really the only guy that they lost through the portal that you'd say, yes, would definitely have been a starter last year. They still have some holes to fill. I'm sure they'll be active in the spring there. But all the credit to Clark Lee and that staff.
Now, looking at Alabama, Mitch, they had their right guard transfer. They had two linebackers that transferred. Now, the right guard, he wasn't the best. But he had been a starter for this Tide team, who was bad across the board from an offensive line standpoint. Are we going to see sort of like what we're seeing with Florida State, where guys are leaving in droves because they don't see the program improving? I'm not saying that Alabama is going to, go into dumpsters or anything else, but this isn't the Alabama team that we're used to seeing. They fired their defensive coordinator, not too long ago. Yep. What we saw the product on the field wasn't a reminiscent of what we're used to. Are we going to continue? I know they got some guys in, but are we going to continue to see guys choose to leave Alabama because it's not the Alabama that they got recruited to?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I know it's just a bowl game and you don't want to put too much stock, but for a program that had very few opt-outs, I was disappointed in their bowl game performance against Michigan too. I'm a Kalen DeBoer believer. He is a great coach. He has been a great coach. Coaching in Alabama is a different animal, as we all know. The one thing I'll say is they recruited extremely well, so there's a lot of incoming talent. It's not like I'd be a lot more concerned about the future is if their recruiting took several steps back. I'd say they took a half a step back because you're going to do that when Nick Saban leaves, but they still signed the top two or three class. You know, I without knowing all of the reasons for the departures, you hear some of it's NIL, some of it's, some of them a lot of programs a starter could leave, and we on the outside, we could be like, ooh, that's a big loss. But maybe the staff said, hey, you might be a better fit somewhere else. I'm not making excuses for anyone. We just don't know. But it's clear Alabama is now just another SEC program. They are not Alabama on top of the SEC looking down on anyone. I think next year is going to be a really interesting season for them, again, because their talent level will be good as always, but they don't have the top talent across the board. I mentioned quarterback is going to be interesting. They got this guy, Keelan Russell, coming in, a true freshman, freshman from Texas, from Duncanville. State power there, but by some accounts, the national player of the year. Well, he started as a freshman, so there's some answers at the most important position there. But Kalen DeBoer's pretty much always had a really good offense. But I agree with you. It will be one of the more intriguing programs to watch next year.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, joining us previewing the college football playoff. Mitch, as always, great stuff. Enjoy the games upcoming.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light joining us on the program. You can hear the Orange Bowl here on 102.5, 106.3. The game kickoff is at 6:30, 615-737-1025. We've gone this long without talking about the supreme ruler of football, Chad Brinker. Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports had some interesting comments about Chad Brinker and some of the things going on behind the scenes with the Tennessee Titans. We will play those comments coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Supreme ruler.
The Imperial March.
One of my faves.
That can only mean one thing. It's time to talk.
Is that Chad Brinker?
Chad Brinker's in the house.
It's time to talk.
Can I tell you one thing about this? I am a Star Wars nerd. I will admit that the newer stuff, I wasn't as enthusiastic, but you give me some trivia on the first three movies, I can score very high. I can score very high on the three movies. But I took my son when he was real little, he's probably just a little bit older than Arlo is now, the symphony coming in and playing in the arena all the Star Wars music.
Yes.
Right? And they played they had the movies in the background going a little bit, but the music was live. They played the soundtrack, basically. It was really fun. And they had a lot of the characters walking around the concourse and stuff. My son enjoyed it. Then they played the Imperial March, of course. They actually had the guy who played C-3PO in person standing up there, and he was kind of your guide through the night. And so the concert was just about over, and all the main songs had been played that we know. And we're getting ready to leave, and he goes, "Would you guys like to hear the Imperial March one more time?" And the whole crowd was like, "Yeah!" So that was the encore. That brought the house down. Like, as much as the main theme is so well known, the Imperial March might be the best piece, arguably, right? That could be the debate, right? What's better?
It reminds me of, shocker, a moment from The Simpsons. Who was the band that sang Taking Care of Business? Was that Bachman Turner Overdrive?
Is that right?
Bachman Turner Overdrive. And Homer is at a concert where Bachman Turner Overdrive is playing, and they say, "Now we're going to play a song from our new album." And Homer screams, "No, no new talking, no new crap, taking care of business now." And then they start getting
365.
Just keep playing it. That's right. All we want to hear.
And then they start playing Taking Care of Business. So I understand. You got to play the hits.
Yeah, that is a bummer when a group that's been around wants to play all of their new songs.
No, we don't want to hear the new
stuff. I get it. Mix them in, but you got to play the favorites too. You got
to
do it.
You go to see Toto. You're not hearing the new. You don't want to hear the new song from Toto. Africa. Just play Africa for an hour, as far as I know.
Rosanna. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Anyway, Chad Brinker. Chad Brinker, as we know, the supreme ruler of football for the Tennessee Titans. He has total roster control. We haven't talked about a lot of these general manager candidates. You know, we're seeing a lot of reporting about who the Titans are going to be interviewing for general manager. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know a lot of them. I did see Terry McCormick yesterday report that Thomas Dimitroff, the former general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, who was the general manager of the Falcons team that lost in the Super Bowl to the New England Patriots, he is interviewing for the job. And that's a name I do know. But we talked about this yesterday and the day before. Whoever the new GM turns out to be, doesn't sound like they're going to have a whole bunch of authority. So,
we're going to play the clip. I thought Charles had some really compelling, thought-provoking stuff, right? Whether you agree with everything or part of it, it was very interesting perspective, which we're going to play. But I think the number one thing that we need to debunk is that who would be interested in that job? There's only 32 of them. There will be a lot of people interested in that job. A lot of people. Even if you have your questions and doubts, it is such a coveted position. You will have a lot of people. Now, choosing the right person, that's a whole nother story. And are you getting the best of the best coming in there?
That's what Adam said yesterday.
I don't know, but you're going to get a lot of people that have some talent that want that job.
So Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, he joins Robbie and Rex Road every Thursday morning. And, of course, the topic of conversation is what happened with the Titans earlier this week when they fired Rand Carthon and gave Chad Brinker even more power. And one thing that Charles Robinson said, and this is something we knew, that Amy Adams Strunk is not present in the Titans' offices very much. And one thing that Charles emphasized was when an owner isn't present, you know, you do have to demonstrate your value to the owner as much as you possibly can, because he or she is not there overseeing you every single day and seeing all of the things that you're doing. So that led to a conversation about what Chad Brinker was able to do to get Amy Adams Strunk's ear and ultimately get promoted even further, you know, up the ladder, so to speak. So this was Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports on Robbie and Rex Road this morning.
The most influential person in an organization underneath an owner is someone who could do many things. That is very impressive to owners. And Chad Brinker, through no fault of his own, has an extremely wide base of experience. Extremely wide. Like, one of the most varied bases of experience of almost any NFL executive that really you can find. I mean, look, 8 years in scouting, 3 years in cap, 2 years in football ops. He's got analytics under his belt. I mean, he's a Nexus guy. He is someone who can sit in the middle and talk knowledgeably and smartly to Amy about almost anything in the operation. So what happens is Amy starts to look at Chad Brinker and go, this guy's really useful. And I need someone who can, I have a president of the operation, and my president of the operation, Burke Nihil, but he's more of a business minded. Like, this is the business guy. He's going to set up the business end of this. We've got that taken care of. What I need is an individual who can come in and lend structure to the football side. I need somebody who can basically put it all in order. Analytics, cap, scouting, like, I need all these things. Football ops, they all have to work together, and I need somebody who can do that. Now, the question you can ask is, why did she choose Chad and not Ran? I can't speak to that, other than the fact that when you look at the experience between the two, the one with the far more varied resume and the one who was steeped in a number of things in a successful organization, doing, like I said, that multitude of, and they were real years. I mean, 3 real years working in cap, 8 real years grinding and scouting, like all these different things. Chad brought a lot to the table. And I think ultimately that's how Chad ended up in that position. And also, I will tell you, be very careful about assuming that Chad was pitching himself to get that job. I have seen in organizations, and I can't say this is exactly what happened in Tennessee, but I have seen in organizations where owners will spend time with people in that executive suite, and next thing you will know, the next offseason, they will approach that individual and say, hey, look, I think you can do more here. I think there's a bigger role for you here. This is what I have in mind. And then it's incumbent upon that person to go, okay, like I'm now going to climb over some other people in the organization, and I have to understand how I feel about that, and I'm willing to do that. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened in Tennessee, but I am just telling you, do not discount the ability of Chad Brinker to speak authoritatively on a number of different things and how that probably impacted Amy, who, again, I cannot stress this enough, is not there on a very constant, consistent basis.
That was Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. A lot there.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing is clear in listening to Charles Robinson. Chad Brinker made himself indispensable to Amy Adams Strunk. And perhaps it certainly sounds like the fact that Amy Adams Strunk is an absentee owner in the sense that she is not in the office every single day. That can help a certain someone sway, you know, get a certain amount of sway.
It's the game you have to play.
Yes.
And I've talked about it when you were playing, mm-hmm. D-Mace, the dynamic of Bud Adams being in Houston. The team was in Tennessee. It was all new. Mm-hmm. But I think Floyd Reese, Jeff Fisher, and later Jeff Diamond all had to play the game of how is our owner, who everything revolves around, absorbing information? Who is he getting information from? You have to get in on that game if you want to survive. And I do think that there is some parallel there.
You know, I like to keep things simple, straightforward and simple, okay? Y'all can discuss it how you want to, and it was great the way Charles put it all together. And you're right, if you go back and listen to it, because it is a good listen, whether you agree with them or not. I didn't agree all the way with them with some things, and I did text Joe Joe, this morning
I was abused. My phone started buzzing a lot.
You're part of the,
and I enjoyed the exchange.
Mine as well. Yeah.
And but I just sort of disagree with sort of how he was, you know, going around a particular question, not necessarily whether Brinker did this or not. It had nothing to do really with Brinker. It had more so to do with how the organization sort of put together this new structure based on Josina Anderson's report and others' report. So that was mainly for the organization. But I like to keep things simple. And I know our listening audience love to just keep things simple, okay? Essentially, what he's explaining is this. Like, okay, I am going to make sure if I want, and I may not be overtly saying, I want your job, Adam. I want your job, Adam. I don't want your job, Adam. But I'm not just saying, I want your job, Adam. I know how to do it without saying, I want his job. I know how to make sure I place myself strategically in places where I know that I can talk to Amy one-on-one by myself. Now, Rand chose not to do that. That's his fault. But I'm not going to say, hey, Amy, I want Rand's job. What I'm going to say is, hey, listen, this is what we can do. This is how we can get better, yada, yada. I'm going to show you. I'm going to tell you from my expertise how this thing should go. Not saying we adding Rand and Brian into the mix when I'm talking to Amy. It's more so of, I would do it like this, or I would say it like this, or Amy, this is how the analytics part work. Because that's the one thing that I think he truly has over Rand and he had over John, is the analytics part. He spent Charles Robinson said he spent 2 full years, the analytics and the salary cap part of it. He spent 2 whole years. They made sure, Green Bay, made sure he had that knowledge that he needed. Well, while he was doing that, Rand was scouting and John was running the team. So they didn't have that 2 years to just immerse themselves into analytics and stuff like that. Maybe they should have. But they're just probably thinking about it from a, what do we think a GM's job is? The main thing is the main thing with the GMs. Get the talent, identify the talent, acquire the talent, and then help that talent reach its maximum potential, which is on the coaches. They're thinking about it from that standpoint. Well, Brinkert is coming at it from another angle. He's coming at it from, I'm hitting her with the analytical stuff. She's heard a lot about developing and all that stuff. I'm going to hit her with the analytical part hard. Why? Because she don't really understand it. She don't understand it the way I understand it. So when I talk to you, I'm sitting here with my arms crossed like,
Yeah. That sounds
fancy. Interesting. Exactly.
And look, it is the wave. It is the wave of sports.
Exactly.
Today. It is the modern way that, that organizations do it. You have a team of you.
That's
have
why when they say the that's why when they said that the title has changed, he's right. The title has changed, and it's changed in his favor.
And he sold her on that.
Yeah, exactly. And
I think too, we can't discount John Robinson was kind of old school. He was more like you were saying. Let's keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Do we think this guy's good? Yeah, let's sign him, right? He was not as much into the analytics.
Maybe Vrabel wasn't either.
But Vrabel, I do think, told Amy on the way out, we need a better system here. And I think Brinker was like, I could put it in that system. I've gone through the Northwestern graduate program. Mm-hmm. I've been a scout. And I've been a cap person. Like, he does have, as Robinson pointed out, a very diverse skill set. And I think he was able to articulate and put the vision that, and Amy was like, well, Mike Vrabel did say we need more. I do think he was the guy that said, I put in this infrastructure. I can put this in. So it would be wise for her to say, well, we just started this. Mm-hmm. I'm buying what you're selling. Let's keep going with it. Now, where Rand what was squeezed out in all that whole process, that's what we don't really know. But I think it's fair. Amy Adams does latch on I'm all in on Mike Vrabel. Wait a minute, I'm not all in on Mike Vrabel.
No,
I'm all in on John
Robinson.
Oh, wait a minute, I'm not out. A.J. Brown, you know, just had a – I'm out on John Robinson. That could happen to Chad Brinker down the road. But right now, Chad Brinker is the hot hand, right? He has her ear.
615-737-1025 will take your reaction to Charles Robinson's comments on Chad Brinker from the Robbie and Rex Road program earlier this morning. 615-737-1025. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores will take on Ole Miss with a 6:30 tip-off, and the pregame show will begin at 6:15. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app at 94.9thefan.com. Vanderbilt women's basketball presented by Athletes Unlimited Pro Basketball, coming to Nashville's Municipal Auditorium February 5th through March 2nd. Go to auprobasketball.com for more details and to purchase tickets. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Anytime I can hear, damn, it feels good to be a gangsta.
I was going to say, is this Office Space?
It is indeed Office Space. A great tune.
It's a good movie, too.
We'll have Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet coming up in the next segment. Some Predators news to pass along. Steven Stamkos did not practice today for maintenance. He left the game the other night with an undisclosed injury, but he did not practice today. Luke Evangelista, however, is out for 4 weeks with a lower body injury. Luke Evangelista suffered that injury against the Jets the other night. He is out for 4 weeks with a lower body injury. Steven Stamkos out today from practice for maintenance reasons, but no status for Saturday against the Capitals. But we'll talk to Elliot
Friedman. They will get Zach LaRue off of the suspended list, mm-hmm. so that would be a logical replacement in the short term for Evangelista. But we'll get to that when the time comes.
Yes, Elliot Friedman in the next segment. Bob is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bob, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, y'all are talking about general manager. You know, we got a Tennessean young man that was born and raised in Tennessee, played at UT Martin, went into scouting, went to New York Giants, and won 2 Super Bowls eventually as their general manager. And he's living in the Middle Tennessee area, probably wouldn't even have to relocate. Jerry Reese.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I didn't hear who he said.
I didn't hear. Did he say Terry Reese?
I think he said Terry, yeah.
Crease,
I think is what he said.
I wish I could hear that.
Maybe I didn't hear him right. I was not familiar
like
with that.
Bob, if
Terry
you're listening, text us who you were saying,
yeah,
and
Terry
we'll discuss.
Reese or,
it was hard to hear.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea.
I see all of these names. Mm-hmm. There have been many reported names for the Titans GM search in terms of, you know, who is interviewing for those positions. And
it's Jerry Reese.
Jerry Reese.
Yes. Okay.
And who is Jerry Reese?
Jerry Reese was the
not related to Floyd.
Yeah, not related to Floyd.
But he was with the Giants for a long time.
Jerry Reese. He was the reason they won. Yeah. He was part of the 2011 Super Bowl team.
Okay.
So here are some of the names.
He has a lot of accolades for sure. I don't know how old Jerry Reese is now. It seems like he's been around for a long time. But I don't know all the particulars there.
So here are some of the names that have been reported for interviews.
Jerry Reese is 61 years old.
Okay.
With the Tennessee Titans. Mike Borgonzi, Chiefs assistant general manager. Catherine Hickman, Browns assistant general manager. Glenn Cook, Browns assistant general manager. Terrence Gray, Bills director of player personnel. Ed Dodds, Colts assistant general manager. John Spytek, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Buccaneers assistant general manager. Terry McCormick yesterday reported that Thomas Dimitroff, the former general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, will interview for the job as well. But with everything going on with Chad Brinker, as I said before, a lot of these names I am unfamiliar with because I don't know the ins and outs of every other NFL organization. But the likeliest scenario is that the person that takes this job is an up-and-comer looking for that boost in job title. Willie, as you said yesterday, you know, you may have the responsibilities of more of an assistant general manager, but your job title will say so-and-so general manager, and that comes with, you know, that comes with something, you know, it's a promotion. But I'm having a hard time, like, getting invested in this GM search, knowing where Chad Brinker sits in all of this. Is that strange?
No.
Well, see, it depends on how much you want to take a dynamic from afar and speculate or even talk to people. And then, because none of us that are covering this really know unless you're in there day to day. You can, even if you're asking people and they're giving you feedback, Jared yesterday a lot, I thought he had a very compelling show yesterday, and he would refer every 3 seconds to my sources, my sources. I don't know who the sources are. Mm-hmm. I have not considered Jared over the years to be an investigative reporter, right? He's not a writer from a journalistic side, training-wise, but I know enough about the sports talk show is plenty of people can influence a sports talk show host by bringing them perspective, right? It just depends on what you want to do with that perspective. I have plenty of people that I bounce things off to try to get a perspective of what's going on when I'm not there. You can't be everywhere, right? As a sports talk show host, that's why we talk about Stephen A. Smith. He can't be at all 32 teams and all four major sports and all the college teams. You can't know what's going on. You have to rely on people to bring you what you hope is accurate perspective. So I'm not going to go too far with the soap opera, the backstabbing and the lying or whatever Jared wants to take with it. I would say this, though. I am most curious about the what Charles Robinson hit on the dynamic in the, what do you call it, the executive suite, mm-hmm. right? Because here's what I think we do know. Brinker was, I shouldn't say no, but I can see this as being a plausible thing. That Chad Brinker had some time around Amy Adams to sell this vision of more modern, more analytic, more layers, having everybody communicate better. That sounds like a vision that an owner who doesn't go in there every day mm-hmm. would want, right? That sounds good. That's what I want. Now, is she in there every day to oversee it? Does she have the background to manage? Has she been a CEO? No, she's just the owner of a team that inherited a team that wants it to be successful for her family's heritage, all that. It's important to her that way. But you've got to have the right people in place. Brinker seems to have sold her on that. The other dynamic I'm curious about is this gets back to, Adam, your thing about titles. It was brought to my attention, not just on Jared's show, but he mentioned this, and other people have said this as well. There's a person on the staff named Bryce Wasserman who has the title on the Titans website. I'm looking at it right now. Chief of Staff, Football Operations. Now, there is a really generic title that sounds important. Right? Chief of Staff. I could say Chief of Staff. You could say I'm the GM. I'm the Chief of Staff. They both sound pretty fancy from afar. Yeah. But we have no idea from the outside what that means for either one of us. But you and I on the inside know what's going on. But I would imagine Bryce Wasserman, who, according to what has been said by Jared, is engaged to Amy Adams Strunk's daughter, I believe. So he is in there, and I believe he's a lawyer, if I'm told correctly. But either way, he's the chief of staff. He's probably around Amy Adams Strunk and has a unique relationship there. So Chad Brinker around there. How does all of that work? I ask the question all the time, going back years. Who does Amy Adams Strunk confide in to make the big decisions, to say, okay, who knows what they're doing over there? So these are the people I wonder what that atmosphere in the executive suite is that Charles Robinson was talking about. And he was speculating that Chad Brinker, who has a very diverse background with a unique skill set that are very legitimate credentials, how that can be very appealing sounding. What I'm not going to do is speculate on that I know any of the answers to these questions, but I am really curious about that dynamic there, knowing what the track record of Amy Adams Strunk has been.
This, as you are talking, Willie, this reminds me of Any Given Sunday. When Al Pacino, it was like the daughter was getting in the ear of the owner, and Al Pacino was a longtime coach, and she was smoozing up, making sure she got what she wanted, like in an overt, not an overt way, but kind of like a, yeah, it's like, okay, we're going to make sure I get what I want. Now, I'm not trying to take your job, but I am trying to make sure I have the power. And it was like, okay, you got this coach that has been there for a long time. Now you got this sort of new person who's, I believe she was the owner's daughter, that's now trying to position herself in such a way to have power over you. This just seems like a movie. How you're explaining it, positioning right. yourself to make sure you get close to the chief of staff, which we all know the chief of staff is the person that is speaking for, you know, sort of like the owner, president, whatever. They are the one that's tasked to bring the information to everybody. Well, in football sense, the chief of staff doesn't come out and talk to everybody. We know the GM does that or the president. But essentially, that's what it is. You're so close to the owner that I don't need to get to the owner necessarily. Only thing I have to do is get to you as the chief of staff. And buddy, you, it could be a good friendship. But I understand that my friendship can directly affect my positioning on this team. It's simple. It is completely simple. You and listen, whether he backstabbed Rand or not, I just think the way all this stuff went, it's just sleazy. It does seem like backstabbing. But however it went around, however it went down, he positioned himself perfect. Because once he got the ear, supposedly coming from Jarrett, once he got the ear of Bryce Wasserman, now he has the ear of Andy. Right.
And I'd love to tell you what Bryce Wasserman's
if that
background
is, case.
But on the website, when I click on biography, there is no biography. And that's the thing about a lot of these people on the staff. They don't have a very organized website that tells you the background of these guys. So I don't know exactly Bryce Wasserman's background and where he came from and what he brings to the table from his experience. Mm-hmm. But it does seem logical that he would be in this mix of people who have Amy's ear and help her shape her vision of what's going forward, what decisions to make.
615-737-1025. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet will join us next to discuss the NHL at Nashville Predators. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.